Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back. We are recapping the episode 2 of season 44, and we're bringing it back in Survivor history. John, your overall thoughts on this episode?
This episode is really interesting, especially when we look at it from a historical Survivor standpoint, because the first 20 minutes of this episode is essentially idol hunting, and we don't really have an episode that's like that. There's not a lot that's like dedicates this much time to a known advantage and the hunt for it. So it was really interesting. It was almost too much for me. I think there were so many more interesting dynamics. We still don't know a lot about that. The Green Tribe at all. Which one's that again? That's the Soka Tribe?
Yes.
The Soka Tribe. Other than like the Matt and Franny of it all, which we're definitely going to get into, but we don't know much about that tribe at all.
And how clear and,
yeah, it's just like, it's weird not having these dynamics to really dive into. But overall, like, I enjoyed the episode. I was incredibly distraught by Helen going home. Yes. Especially if you looked at my power rankings, which had Helen at number one this week.
Woo! Go, John! All right. So everyone who is in the power rankings game, you now move a spot up because John fell hard.
Yes. How about you, McKenna? How did you feel about this episode?
Hey, any Survivor is good Survivor for me. I love watching Survivor, and I like getting to know this new cast because I feel like this cast is unlike a lot of other ones that we've seen. We don't have like typical, we have typical archetypes, but I don't think the people within those archetypes are your typical person. So I just really like getting to know all of these new and quirky and, you know, interesting characters. So our first thing that we're going to dive into is they get back to camp, and we have Matt spilling the beans on the reason he played his shot in the dark at that tribal council, so he didn't have to show allegiances or alliances, and an idol could be flushed, and Maddie could go home without him having to do any of it. So the closest thing we could relate this to is Natalie in her first season in San Juan del Sur, kind of changing her vote to vote Alec out and keep Keith and fake that she, oh, I didn't know, I got confused on who I was voting for. So that was our closest relation.
Yeah, it's that big, like the ramifications of that vote that really parallel to what was going on here. Because in the episode last night, we did see Matthew just kind of talking and kind of being confused, talking about being scared, not really knowing what was going on. So he decided to play a shot in the dark, which is similar to how Natalie approached the conversation after voting out Alec over Keith, and how she feigned confusion and just made it seem like she didn't really know what was going on when she was, quite the contrary, in control of absolutely everything that was happening in that tribal council. The awkward thing about this particular situation, there have not been many opportunities where someone has the opportunity to forfeit their vote strategically.
Right.
I guess like the closest moment we have to a strategic forfeiture of your own vote is the safety without power from Winners at War.
Yeah.
Like it's the only real instance, because we haven't seen anyone in this new era use the shot in the dark like Matthew did here. So it's a Survivor first. In future seasons, we can refer to this moment as the strategic development of forfeiting your vote in order to just abstain from getting your hands dirty.
Yeah, I think this is also really interesting because we have Brandon coming kind of combative at Kane, being like, you put my name down. Like, you're the only one still here that wrote Brandon. What the hell? And, you know, that dynamic of going back to camp with the person that you had just voted for. So we have the, you know, famous Rupert, who voted for me? situation in Pearl Islands and how he just goes up to Fairplay and is just like, what the hell? I thought we were aligned. And, you know, that whole scenario.
Yeah, it's a classic moment. You always remember it when you think Pearl Islands is one of those moments that you really think about. When you think about Rupert, you're always thinking about, like, the kind, gentle guy. Mm-hmm. But you kind of... And then you take that moment and pause and think, and you remember this and like the hostility he put forward in this moment. And while Brandon wasn't being this hostile,
fair play.
yeah, that almost happened. Brandon wasn't as hostile by any means. Brandon knew where the vote came from. Mm-hmm. Brandon's hostility, any amount of it, which I, again, was very little, it was more of a, hey, if I didn't play this idol, I was going home here. It was like this preservation conversation. And, like, that concerned him, which is where this is, again, like, a situation that's not really happened before in Survivor, where a single person is the only person to come home or come back to camp and having been the person in a majority to vote someone out. Like, because we've never had a tribal council with so few votes at any, like, an early stage in the game, this is just a scenario that's almost impossibly happened here.
Yeah, and then we have our Patreon content for this week is we are talking Millennials versus Gen X, episode 5, and they come back after David had just played his idol, and so that they have that coming back to camp of, like, oh, David just played an idol to negate all of the votes on Jessica. Well, crap, Jessica's back at camp. So if you want to listen to us deep dive that episode, go over to our Patreon specialist, patreon.com/survivor specialist, and listen to us over there tomorrow.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting situation. Of course, we'll dive into it more on that Patreon podcast, but... Even then, again, like, the numbers are so different with that idol play, wherein, you know, people are like, oh my god, the plan didn't go because an idol was played. But there's more than one person who got by that idol, right? So it's interesting comparing this situation and whether or not we move forward, if we continue this trend in the new era of these smaller tribes and all these advantages, how many times this could happen again and again moving forward. It's one of those things that, again, I feel like this won't be the only time it happens, but it's still the first time it's happened.
Well, let's talk no idols and coming back to camp. Lex in Africa, he's just like, Kelly must have voted for me, must have flipped. And then T-Bird's just sitting back there like, oh crap, not gonna say it was me now because I didn't think Lex would feel this bad about it. So there is that dynamic too of coming back to camp with the person you voted for and they're still here, but then there's that era of mystery.
Yeah, and of course in Africa, T-Bird never really cops up to that vote at all. And we see T-Bird and Lex still have like a relationship afterwards. I think the way Kane. I had so many different names going through my head there. The way Kane handled this situation, like, yeah, we kind of get like that mopey little confessional about it. But I think like all he can really do is be like, yes, I voted for you. And I think the way he handled it by saying, you know what? The last thing I heard, that was what was happening, was the majority of the votes were going on you. He's telling the truth. And as long as he sticks to that, I think he can be in a decent position. I think he can rebound from this. But it's going to be interesting moving forward, seeing how that goes.
And I don't think we can leave this segment without talking about Wentworth will not count. I feel like we have to mention this here because we have basically, I know Kelly had Sierra and Abby voting with her, but basically she voted out Andrew Savage. She was the sole vote to get Andrew Savage out of the game. Everyone else votes for her, and now she's back at camp with everyone else.
Yeah, and that's why I think Brandon's in a better position here than like Kelly was in Camp Cambodia. And of course, Kelly goes almost all the way in that season. Mm-hmm. So you can really rebound from these moments. But I think Brandon's in a better position because based on Matthew's confessional, it seems like Matthew is in Brandon's court with this one. And he wants to be aligned with Brandon, but he didn't want to show his cards to everyone else because everyone else was okay with voting out Brandon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that dynamic goes moving forward.
Well, there's another dynamic we have to talk about, and we're going to the showmance segment of this episode. We are talking about Franny and Matt and their budding island romance, but it kind of seems that Franny is leading Matt along and is not as into the showmance as Matt is. Matt is just like, I'm done, head over heels. Franny's the number one here.
I mean, it feels like Matt is just like this lost puppy dog. And it's awkward, like juxtaposing his like clinging onto Franny with him talking about just coming out of a breakup and stuff and being hurt and everything. Mm-hmm. It makes it really awkward, but this is someone who is so like infatuated with Franny that he is following her along everywhere. And like, it gets to that point where, you know, Franny even says, you know, we have to spend the rest of the day apart from each other. And I mean, there's only one couple I can think of who seem to have this dynamic. And I mean, that's the episode we're talking about tomorrow,
right?
Did it
happen to appear in episode 5 of Millennials vs. Gen X?
They do. Actually, that exact conversation happens in that episode. It's Figgy and Taylor. It's Figtails. Like, Taylor, at that swap, was so confident because the Millennials had the mm-hmm. had the numbers. He was like, no, it's okay. We don't need to hide it. And Figgy's like, no, we have to hide it. We have to, like, not talk to each other. And it's exactly the type of emotions that Franny was evoking here when she's saying, okay, we have to spend the rest of the day apart. I don't want to, but we have to.
Yeah, exactly. I think Fake Tales is our perfect representation in the, oh my God, they're so annoying with this, because like, it was so out in the open of like, we're going off together and talking. It's the excited energy. Mm-hmm. I feel like some of the other couples that we're going to talk about here in a second aren't as bright-eyed and doughy and bushy-tailed and like in the love kind of bubble as Figtails and Franny and Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, I even think like that comparison of Claire's response to the two of them,
mm-hmm.
it kind of echoes like Adam's response to the two of them in that episode we're discussing tomorrow too.
Yeah.
where it's just like, a guys, you're a power couple. Power couples are dangerous, like,
yeah.
Calm down.
Another dangerous power couple, Ozzy and Amanda. Now we have more of the puppy dog aspect in Ozzy, mm-hmm. just following along with Amanda. And, you know, he's good at the challenges, blah, blah, blah. But he's one of those guys that's just, like, was enamored by Amanda. Mm-hmm. And then he got cut. And then we have this awkward final tribal speech.
Do you think we're going to get to final tribal and Matt is going to just talk about how disappointed he is that they cut his time with Franny?
I mean, is Franny in the final three and is Matt on the jury?
I don't know, but I could see it happening. The way that Matt is, like, he's so lost here and he's so just involved with it. And it's like, we don't even have any confirmation of anything romantic happening between the two of them at all. Mm-hmm. All we have is, like, this.
Matt likes her.
It's like schoolboy crush that Matt has.
He's talking about his long pole.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could tell in that moment he was regretting saying that immediately.
Another not real couple that we want to reference is Dan and Kara from David versus Goliath. Dan was all in on Kara. He was enamored by her, and she was just like, ooh, I can use this.
Yeah, which is it kind of leads to what Phil was saying earlier in the week about how he feels, or he was saying it in the power rankings, that he feels like Franny might just take advantage of Matt's infatuation with her. So that's exactly what Kara does, where Kara knows that Dan has this like crush on her and stuff. She's not really feeling it. And she uses that to her advantage. She positions herself well in the tribe because of that, knowing like the strengths that Dan provided for her. I could very much see Franny doing that, especially because like the confessionals we got in this last episode, we had Matt being like head over heels over Franny. Mm-hmm. And I do think like there's a platonic aspect to it too, where it's just like two very kindred souls talking to each other, like people who are, you know, a little kooky and also like nerdy and things like that. Mm-hmm. I understand why they're gravitating towards each other, especially on that tribe. But like Franny's confessionals weren't the same as Matt's in last episode. Right.
Yeah.
They were much more like, I love spending time with Matt. And that was about it.
Mm-hmm. Someone else that we obviously cannot forget about, right? Yeah. Mikey B and Mary Sartain.
Of course.
That power couple that just had to be broken up. So I feel like Claire is getting over this situation of, you know, them buddying up together, that there might be a cut that needs to happen, mm-hmm. instead of like a Chet that is dragging down your tribe. Mm-hmm. They think the power couple is the worst thing in under the sun, so they have to cut one of them. And stereotypically, like if you go back in history, it's always the woman that gets cut. So yeah. I worry for Franny.
Yeah, I definitely have some worries for Franny just based on this one like comment from Claire. Mm-hmm. Like that idea of, you know, power couples are dangerous, people don't like them. That's enough to send triggers. Especially like this is a visible couple forming, right? This is a visible pairing off of people.
Yeah.
Even just saying somebody's a power couple is enough to get people's
like wildfire.
Yeah. Like their radar will go off and they will be so paranoid about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just like it just spreads and spreads and spreads. And no matter what they do to try and combat it, it won't work. But Matt is also not trying to combat it because he's like leaning his head on her shoulder and like laughing and buddying up to each other. So they might have to come to the realization of, oh crap, I might have to vote one of them out, like our next showmance of Kenny and Michelle from Gabon.
Obviously,
he wanted me to talk about this one because of Gabon, and he loves really Gabon.
I mean, we're really stretching the term showmance here with this one, but I feel like Kenny, at the beginning of Gabon, Kenny is just like so enamored with Michelle because of the attention she's giving him, mm-hmm. and like that kind of. It kind of feels like the same type of energy that Matt's giving us here, where it's like the nerdy guy who's not really used to the girls talking to him all the time. Mm-hmm. And when they do, he's just so excited about it.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about Gabon. So, yeah, but our last one that we are mentioning is obviously Rob and Amber. They are the ones that broke the showmance because mm-hmm. they made it to that final two spot. They broke the power couple, the duo, because of how strong of a pairing they were.
Yeah, it's now we are not by any means comparing.
No, we just felt like we really had to start to mention the showmance of all showmances.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't talk showmances on Survivor and not mention Rob and Amber. Now maybe Matt and Franny do become a Rob and Amber. And if that's the case, like, you know, maybe I have to eat a rock on the podcast or something like that. But
yes.
But like, it's the showmance everyone aspires to, right? Like when you get into a showmance, you want to run the show like Rob and Amber. And Rob and Amber did that in a small tribe to start. So like the format might be more in favor of a power couple now, with these smaller six mm-hmm. people tribes than it has been previously when we have like 10 people tribes.
Yeah. Yeah. And but there's also less room to hide with that power couple. So, all right, we are done with the lovey-dovey segment. We are done with showmances, and we are going on to group idol hunts, because now this is a big segment within this episode. So there's nothing as this, because the birdcage is so obvious. There's group hunts of, oh, this idol just got played at tribal council. There has to be one put in play. We're not saying that there's no obvious group idol hunts, but there's none with the specific like asterisks of this birdcage. So we just wanted to talk about some group idol hunts where a bunch of people knew about where an idol was located or something like that. So our first one is Heroes versus Villains, where Russell finds the idol in the wall. So they get a idol clue on their Sprint phone. We are not sponsored by Sprint, by the way. Their phone, and is like, it's here. Go find it when you get back to camp. And so Russell takes off with Sandra, with Parvati, with everybody that was at that reward. And he quickly finds it and shoves it in his pants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the common thing, right? And the interesting thing with this idol hunt that was different is we saw these weird groupings happening with these in these tribes where mm-hmm. people were really spread out. And I feel like if there's a known advantage, the best thing you can do is be in a pair, find the advantage, and then come back for it later.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than like trying to sneakily shove it in your pants. Because like, we saw that last week, right? Like Brandon mm-hmm. tried to pull that last week and it didn't work well for him.
Right.
But in Heroes vs. Villains, we see Russell do it incredibly skillfully. We see it in Kaguya-yan when everyone's hunting for Spencer's idol, and Spencer finds it in the wall and is able to put it there with Cass pretty much looking right at him. Mm-hmm. Like there are moments where you can get away with it, but like these group hides are so weird because it's just like everyone knows it's there, and then you get the paranoia of, okay, did anyone actually find it afterwards, which we see later in this episode.
So we're gonna keep with this group, this idol hunt, but go more toward idols have been put in very obvious places, but not to the contestants' knowledge. So where the contestants knew within this birdcage there was an advantage. But say China, where they have the plaques on that archway, they don't know that these are idols for the game, because one, idols are rather new at this point. But they don't know that if you peel them off, here's an idol. So the hidden in plain sight idols here are really interesting.
And the interesting thing with China, the bigger parallel we have is with when the Tika tribe went back to the cage and they saw that the drawstring had been opened a bit, and like they could tell that someone had been in there and someone must have the idol. It's very similar to that moment when Jamie realizes one of the plaques is missing off of the archway in China, right? Where it's something that you see every day. It's so innocuous, but then you notice when something's different about it.
Yep. And then we also have Yao Man digging straight down under the cave for his little turtle. And he has to try and smooth over this dirt that they've been sleeping on. It's now like packed in. They know the way the dirt looks. It's been there. They haven't moved it. So then now there's fresh dirt here. So he's trying to like smooth everything over, make sure everything is nice, put the palm fronds back where they were, and try and make it so it wasn't as obvious that he just dug a giant hole underneath their cave.
Yeah. And then you also have instances like the flag idols, like the idols that were hidden under the beach flags in HHH and Micronesia, which again, obvious locations that are hard to dig under and get there without anyone noticing.
Right.
And like, that's the other thing with these like public idol hunts is when everyone knows there's an idol somewhere. It is so difficult to find that idol and then make sure you are the only one who knows that you have that idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The last hidden in plain sight idol that we're going to talk about is the Philippines rice plaque of sorts.
Kind of, yep.
Top lid.
Yeah.
Where who's going to think their tribe emblem is that idol?
Yeah, again, it's one of those like, this is so obvious. And again, we have that moment where someone notices it's missing, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, wait, where is it? And why is it missing? But that one's one of those ones where you can kind of like brush it off as, oh, it must have fallen off when we were like lifting up the rice lid or something.
So Catherine in our comments here has put genius putting it back in the cage. So that's kind of what we've been talking about with these obvious idol finds here is they're trying to make it look like nothing happened. So Carolyn tried to make it look like nothing was taken out of the bag. But since they can examine it a lot more and they'd been staring at this thing for days that they knew was something, like they didn't know someone was going to dig under the cave in Fiji. So they're not going to think that this dirt is weird.
Yeah.
But like Carson and like everybody that walked up to it was immediately like, that's whack.
The other problem is that like Carolyn has Carson on that tribe who will be someone who's like, look how the bag's sitting differently. Like it doesn't have anything in it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So like that is just super, super analytical that you don't get in the, I mean, the China one was a little bit obvious because the wood stain, but like the rice, the, you know, the Micronesia flag idol, they're like, those aren't as obvious as something quite like this. So during this group idol hunt, Carolyn encounters something little suspicious in the tree. And at first, as viewers, we're like, crap, she found the idol. Whoa. And then she's like, it's a snake. So welcome to Survivor Wildlife segment. The one you never knew you needed. Nature with Tyson, but without
Tyson. It's so interesting to think about like the wildlife encounters that have happened on Survivor, especially because like the snake, obviously a terrifying one because A, people are scared of snakes. I don't know what type of snake that was. I assume it wasn't venomous because it wasn't very colorful. So I'm assuming it's some sort of constrictor. I hope, and like, I mean, Carolyn didn't get bit as far as we know. So that's also a good thing.
Yeah.
But we've had a couple of instances where we haven't had many where we've had like very dangerous wildlife encounters or fear response to wildlife encounters. But we have a couple. I mean, Africa was pretty much just like, hey, you're going to die if you don't like watch out for wildlife the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, you should have at least one person up and take shifts in the night to watch out for predators and animals. Always make sure you have a fire going. Build up these brush fences around your camp because you could die. And I'm just like, like that's
Survivor was real back then.
That's a lot to take in when you're just thinking you're gonna survive somewhere. You're surviving in that season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like if we're really talking about the most fearful response to an animal, we have to talk about Austin, right? In Pearl Islands and his pelican encounter.
Yes, Pelican Pete. He was a pelican that just happened to come across their camp and was just like, what are these things over here? And Austin was just like, I want nothing to do with it. It kind of comes up into the shelter. Tawana's like, ooh, Pelican Pete saying hi. And Austin's just like, I'm out of here. And just like leaves, is ready to chop him up for dinner. Like,
Austin actually had a fear of birds too, did he not?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And that's where I think we get the closest thing to Carolyn's response here to the snake. And to be fair, if I put my hand somewhere and there's a snake there, I'm not even like scared of snakes. I'll probably still have the same response as Carolyn. But the only like real fear response we've had to animals is Austin. In fact, the other snake response we have had on Survivor, also from Pearl Islands, quite the opposite of Carolyn's response.
Little Balboa. It was the tribe pet.
Yeah. And mascot. And name of the merged tribe because of him.
I know, exactly. Little subtle plug. Go back in the Patreon archives where we deep dove the entire Pearl Island season. Myself, Alex Trias, and Annabelle Self. If you want to hear us rewatch and recap that entire season. But yes, when I watched this scene of the snake, I was just like immediately Pelican Pete because he's running a terror. But another animal that people might not remember is Megilla the gorilla, not an actual gorilla, from Thailand, where he is stealing all of their food while they go out to challenges because it's not properly stored. And they didn't think about a monkey coming to steal it.
Yeah, again, like it's these early seasons of Survivor that really had the wildlife in place. We haven't had a wildlife encounter that isn't like, oh, there's a goat, for a long time on Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a goat encounter, game changers, Sandra's ready to kill it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, when we're talking about the snake encounter, I guess the only thing that really comes close to the snake is, like, Hatch's shark.
I mean, Hatch bit that shark back.
He did, but, mm-hmm. but like, and, like, this is the interesting part of Survivor to me. I really love these type of interactions with, like, the environment, mm-hmm. and because we've been in Fiji so long, and these sites are being reused so much, you have to imagine, like, the wildlife kind of knows when to steer clear of it because of production and everything like that.
Right.
So even just seeing, like, the snake here, it's a nice reminder of the survival aspect of Survivor.
Yeah, exactly. I always like when we can get that, like, a little bit back to basics of this was such a very old school kind of scene with the snake. And I always think when we do the B-roll cutscenes of animals, I'm just like, I feel like you didn't see these here. Or you definitely put that spider on the tribal council set.
Yeah.
Like, these aren't something that, like, I can, oh, crap, like, these snakes are really around tribal council? Like, no, now we're at camp and we're seeing, you know, truly the dangers of what they are doing of living out in the bush.
I think the most fascinating thing about the snake encounter from last night's episode, though, is that it really helped Carolyn conceal the fact that she found the key to the cage, because she could just, like, respond all giddy and stuff because of the finding the key and, like, being excited, and mm-hmm. kind of put it off as a, I'm still rattled by this snake.
Yes, but luckily it was not a rattlesnake. Yes. Speaking of snakes, we go to the challenge, and that maze that's there at the challenge is what was used in Edge of Extinction and Winners at War for the Merge Bring Back EOE challenge.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting seeing it just in a regular tribal challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
without these high stakes, even and just in a tribal challenge in general, and not an individual challenge, mm-hmm. where you know you can elect someone to go to it and you know, navigate these things. McKenna, have you ever done a challenge like this before? Like, navigated the ball up through a maze like this?
Not like that. I've played a few live Survivor games, and I've done kind of like a table maze situation. So there were four people. We each had two ropes, and we had to, like, navigate a cue ball through mm-hmm. different, like, nestle it into a few different pockets. But nothing quite like this, where it's on a balance beam and you're trying, like, rigs to try and, like, maneuver it up.
So there's a mini golf course here. And the third hole, I know, it's a weird thing to say. There's a mini golf course here up in Victoria, Canada. And there's the third hole in it is, it's not a snake-shaped maze, but it's like a maze with, like, a bunch of holes that you have to navigate and do this exact same motions on.
I mean, they have the cheese board
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's like, this is harder than it looks, is what I'm trying to get at.
I don't doubt it. This is harder.
And putting tribal immunity on this challenge specifically, very difficult. Though Matthew made it look super easy.
He didn't drop once because, well, he had a plywood structure in his backyard.
So we know previously, we know in Winners at War, they had to sink two balls on this maze. Do you think they had to sink more than one ball in this tribal portion as well?
I'm not sure. I think I could see them cutting it out, but I could also see them just having the one because it is a tribal challenge and there was a lot more involved than just like a run over the hitching post, do this, that, and the other thing, grab the balls, untie them, and run to the snake. So like the main part of the individual is the snake, but there were a bunch of other like main parts. If they couldn't pull the bridge up, they couldn't, you know, go across that section. So I could see it just being one.
And speaking of the bridge and everything, like this is a newer trend we're seeing in Survivor with the get one person over and make it easier for the rest of the tribe to go over this obstacle.
Like, yeah.
We've seen it occasionally before. It's more prominent in international Survivor than it is in US Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, just that triple balance beam where you pull it to make it flat, like those kind of challenges are, I think there were a couple, one or two, maybe in Amazon that did a little of like, make it easier for the tribe, or one person does this one section to unlock the tribe members. So like with the bridge, one person had to cross it so the rest of the tribe can do something. Yeah. Finish out the challenge.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of like it. I think it visually looks really good in these challenges, and I really hope they continue with them. It also adds a little more variety to these challenges that have just been like obstacle courses into puzzle.
Right, exactly. And so now we're kind of going to move on to the vote here. And our big takeaway was so this, we had two. So one is Sarah kind of likening to Chanel in the Jenny boot, where Chanel didn't tell anybody she didn't have a vote. Sarah didn't tell anybody she didn't have a vote and was just kind of winging it to tribal council.
Yeah, now there is a possibility that we just didn't see Sarah mentioning the fact that she may or may not have a vote for the tribal council.
We might get that next week.
Which would explain why Carson decided to go over with Jam Jam and Carolyn. But it the parallels between season 42 with that Jenny boot and this Helen boot are just like too spooky not to talk about.
Yeah. People not having their votes, and it was just wild that, you know, Carolyn had her just stayed as calm as she could.
Yeah, especially with like the confessional about how she's like, and then the conversation she had with Jam Jam about why would Carson do this? What is his angle?
Yeah. And then our next point is, Carolyn seems like the obvious boot. She's like, time in and time out of Survivor, we have like those obvious boots, but then they don't go home. Carolyn didn't go home. She's still here. And other went home in, you know, Helen. So we kind of wanted to talk about, and what I am repping today, a lot of the merge of Vanuatu. With Chris.
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly that point in Vanuatu where Chris hooks up with Twyla Scout and Eliza and starts flipping everything around, because people get complacent when it seems like there's an obvious boot. We see it so many times in the history of Survivor where there's an obvious boot and someone's placated by that obvious boot, which makes it so much easier to blindside them. And that's what we have here. We just have Carolyn seemed like an obvious boot. She's erratic. The weird thing about this episode was no one really suspected Carolyn of having the idol from what we saw, which was really weird because she was the only one not with the four of them when they came back and the birdcage was tampered with. So
Bruce has it. It's the ghost of Bruce. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But yeah, Carolyn was just so obviously the target because she didn't fit in that it just completely eradicated Helen's sense of what was going on. And that's exactly what happened in Vanuatu. It's how we had that demise of Amy and Leanne in that season, is because it was so obvious to them that Chris should be going, that Chris could just take advantage of it.
Yes. I mean, if the women were smart, they would have gotten rid of Chris. So that leads me to believe, what the heck is Carolyn going to do? Because she's gaining these people on her side when she is such an emotionally erratic player. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I feel like she is such a fiercely loyal person in the game, but you never know what she's going to say. And telling her too many secrets could lead to a slip of the tongue. So I'm interested to see how Carolyn moves forward in this, if she is going to be that person that they should have gotten her out at this tribal council. They had the opportunity to.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how she's going. But speaking of Carolyn, there is one more bonus Survivor history moment I want to reach back to, because in this episode, there is a confessional of Carolyn talking about digging through her son's poop for 3 days to find his tooth. And we would be remorse not to mention Jillian talking about elephant dung.
All right, we're bringing it back to Gabon.
I got there in the end.
Yes. Yep. Yep. There's the thing. And then Jam Jam and his aqua dumps, but you know.
McKenna, do you have anything else you want to reflect on in this episode, though?
No, I think we covered everything. I'm excited to see what history we can uncover next week and what episode we will be retroactively watching for the Patreon. So please tune in tomorrow to Patreon or become a patron, because John and I will be discussing the swap of Millennials versus Gen X, where David just played an idol to save Jessica, Figtails is big and booming, and the person who is obviously supposed to go home do not.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels in this episode of Millennials vs. Gen X, so make sure to become a $10 or $20 patron so you can hear that. $20 patrons, don't forget to check out Phil's after show. That's up there. And, you know, now is a good time to become a patron. So we're still at the beginning of the season. There's a lot of content
John coming just out now. The power rankings real bad. So
I did. You know. I did. You can join the power rankings and not even feel that bad, because I put Helen at number one this week. So become a patron. Sign up on patreon.com/survivalspecialists. Make sure to tune in to Phil and Peridium's power ranking and preview show this Monday at 3:00 Eastern. Alexa isn't going to be here for that episode, nor the episode recap on Wednesday, but Phil's still there, filling y'all in on everything.
Filling y'all in.
Yeah, and we'll be back again next week. So thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful night.
Tomorrow on Patreon.